Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host, Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. What started as a conversation on culture and mental health soon turned into one on millennials and mental health. Through the course of this conversation, we touch on various aspects of millennial lives and how they impact the mental health of what is sometimes called the therapy generation. Millennials are unique in how they're changing the way Indian society looks at mental health by being more open about their issues and destigmatizing therapy. Our guest today is Ritika Bhandari. Ritika is a Bangalore-based counselor and holds an MSc in work psychology. She seamlessly combines a unique understanding of culture with a plethora of techniques, both holistic and alternative. Hi, Ritika. Welcome to our show.
Hi, Prachi. Thank you for having me here.
Right. The topics that we wanted to discuss today, they concern mental health. And one of the bigger determinants of mental health in general is culture.
Mm-hmm. True.
We're all aware that culture affects mental health, but we just don't know how or in what ways because we're so ingrained and seeped into it. Yes. And that's what we really want to talk about today. What is culture, really? And how is it affecting our mental health?
Well, like you said, culture is considered to be a very important factor in the way we express our emotions, the way we feel, how we talk about our physical symptoms, because it's so deep-rooted. As and when we grow, that's what we observe and that's what we instill. Culture can actually influence how we describe about our feelings, our emotions, our symptoms, and how we actually choose to recognize that and then therefore spread it to people. So if I am feeling a little, low, and if I am around people who will not understand my concept of low, I will choose to, express it very differently, saying that, okay, I've got fever and I'd like to rest, or, I just don't want to meet people right now.
So in the Indian context, how would that work? Like, can you give us an example?
In the Indian context, if I take up a particular mental health issue. So if I talk about, say, anxiety, specifically in Indian culture, people aren't very aware of what anxiety is all about. So the awareness is very low. So if I am feeling anxious, I will not be able to openly and freely tell people that I'm anxious. It will be more described as, I am not feeling well, I'm having palpitations, I think I need to go check my BP because I feel there could be something wrong with BP. And I think that is purely coming from the background that we survive in.
So sometimes are people even aware they're having anxiety? Like in our culture, people might actually think that they are unwell.
It's more like, people don't know what anxiety is. People don't know what depression is. People don't know, what schizophrenia is, ADD is. It's all about how comfortable they are in their society to talk about these terms. And our society itself is not comfortable to talk about mental health. So, probably a generation back, they wouldn't even acknowledge that somebody has anxiety. At least today, DNA, people are talking about mental health. Awareness is being spread. People have been given directions or they've been told the red flags that are there that, they need to go seek help. Otherwise, a lot of people just, when they come to me as a counselor, they come to me and they tell me that they've got depression or they've got anxiety. And my question to them is, have you been diagnosed? And the response that I get to that is, no, I've just read up on it. And I can see that these are the few symptoms that I go through.
And what about awareness around those things? Around these, you may not be clinically depressed. You may not need meds for your level of issues. But you could still have like significant mental health issues.
Yes, absolutely. It can be at a milder level wherein you are anxious about certain things. You are stressed about certain things. It could be as simple as wherein, your behaviors are leading towards clinically depressed, but you just need to be motivated enough to get out and, find your strength outside in the world. So that's wherein our culture plays a role in terms of trust, in terms of expression, in terms of communication, because our society is very judgmental. Let's face the fact that every individual or the society that we live in is very, very judgmental. And what people fear the most is that judgment. So when you talk about awareness, awareness has to neutralize that judgment, giving them the idea that it is okay to feel low. It is okay to express about emotions that people may not understand. So when you talk about that awareness around these areas, mental health experts, even social activists are trying their level best to conduct workshops, to conduct seminars wherein they just identify a few red flags in your space which make you aware that you can seek help. It's not that you need to fight it alone.
And so while there are these negative ways in which our culture impacts our mental health, right? But there might also be a lot of positive ways. One of the ones that I see is, you know, the fact that people are never really lonely.
True that. I think that is also coming from the way our family is structured.
Right.
So, you know, when you talk about previous generations, so I think that's another cultural issue which is changing, which is adding to the mental health problems in today's millennials, like you put it, because older generation family structure was very, very important to us. You know, families did not exist in isolation. The family dynamics were more, coexistent. It was all interdependent. Families were really big. And cultures often determined how the family structure, you know, moved ahead. So when you talk about, like, you know, you're not isolated because you have all your family members around you. So the positive impact here is if you have a problem, you have so many other family members who you can discuss your problem with, because the family unity itself was really strong. So if I am facing a problem in school, I had my siblings to go to, I had my parents to go to. And that is because of that culture that was ingrained into us, that the family is always there for each other. So family structure and culture also has a positive note on that front. But as you see in today's DNA, I think that is just falling apart as well.
So we're moving to like a different kind of family structure, right? Like from a very joint family structure to now a more like nuclear family structure. And that comes with its own set of like issues and challenges and also like its own positives.
Yes. So I think like you hear the phrase that grass is always greener on the other side. So a joint family member always prefers a nuclear family and a nuclear family member prefers a joint family. But having said that, I think every structure or every unit has its pros and has its cons. But when we come to specifically talking about mental health, what we are seeing in today's generation that a lot of families are moving away from the joint family structure to a nuclear family structure. Now, it could be because of culture, it could be because of financial issues, it could be because of the way urbanization or globalization is happening. But as we can see, the more and more people are becoming independent, the dynamics are changing, and there is a conflict between the cultural norms that we've been taught and the independence that is growing within us. Because the culture teaches us to be interdependent, because that's what family is all about. Whereas the nuclear family thought process makes us more independent because we're only worrying about just few people, or maybe just being selfish, because that's what we want in today's DNA.
I understand that joint families tend to be like more strong, stable, close, all of those things. But what are the specific pain points that people who live in this kind of structure face?
I think, like you said, when you talk about joint family being strong and stable, there's also a lot of traditional values that add on to it. There's a lot of patriarchal concepts that has been harboring within the family members inside. There is a lot of integrity, unity, loyalty, which is coming at a cost of independence and expression. So when you're talking about, say, women, for example, a lot of times I've heard from clients or I've seen people around, that even if we take our own examples, that if we want to earn X amount of money and we want to express that emotion that, you know, I want to go take a job and I want to work in a 9-to-5 setting, it's people, women really wonder whether they are able to express that to their family members, especially your parents and grandparents, whether they are going to understand that concept or not. Because in olden days, women were not supposed to be working. That was the concept that has been instilled generations after generations. But in today's millennials, it is more like we are equals. We should also have the equal right of working. So one of the main things is that because of tradition, because of that strong unity, your individuality is, questioned. Your expression is questioned. Your privacy and personal space is questioned.
Right. You mentioned something very interesting. You spoke about the patriarchal system within joint families. And it makes me wonder how women's mental health is impacted because of the patriarchal structures that they have lived in.
That's a very, very interesting point there, because when we talk about patriarchal structure, it's all about being led by men. It's all about being following instructions which are, put down to you by men. And men is the the earning member of the family, whereas women takes care of the house. So when you talk to women and when you link it to the patriarchal structure, what happens is that the main thing that is suppressed is their voice. That even if they want to step out, even if they want to socialize, there is so many inhibitions involved in that, that at a given point is just suppression from which you function. Because you're scared you might break the trust of people, you're scared you might hurt the people, you're scared that people will judge you, you're scared that you might be the black sheep in the family. So they really don't know how to deal with that suppressed emotions, and that could lead to severe mental health issues at some point.
Do you think that leads to self-suppression too? And like creating like a larger set of like self-limiting beliefs within women?
It does, I feel so, because you're suppressed for so many years that you feel that it's better to keep quiet than to actually say what you want. So you come to a point where you're like, there's no point even saying this because you don't know whether you're going to get it. So I might as well keep quiet. And I think over the years, women just learn to be quiet.
Can you give me a specific example of how like self-suppression manifests itself in women's lives or even lives of men?
Self-suppression, I feel in general, manifests as a negative impact with respect to confidence, with respect to self-worth, because sometimes you can even link it directly to capability. Because if I'm not being able to voice my opinion freely, for example, then I come across as somebody who's incapable of actually doing what I want to do. And when you feel incapable, you come across as feeling really small in comparison to the other people around you.
Do you think that's what prevents women from applying to jobs for which they are probably perfectly qualified, but they just feel like they might not get it or, something like that?
Partially, yes, because they have no confidence. Because they're functioning, in my opinion, they're functioning from two main concepts. One is confidence and one is judgment. So if they do have the confidence to speak up, but the family members object or they judge her or she is the one who spoils the name of the family, if I may put it, because of the traditional values that is there, then nobody will speak to you. And then when nobody speaks to you, you feel all alone. So it's a conflict going on in your mind whether you should take that step to do what you want, or is it better to just be suppressed and be quiet and sit back?
I'm sure you speak to like a bunch of Indian millennials, and I wonder what kind of problems they come to you with.
Yes, I do. I do interact with a lot of Indian millennials, and it is amazing to see the kind of issues that they face, primarily to do with independence, space, privacy, coupled with just expression, like how they're unable to express their thoughts because they are fearing judgment. One of the other very striking issue that they feel is the sense of loneliness. They are unable to deal with the concept of being alone, and therefore they're constantly striving to be around people so that they don't feel that void of being alone.
Right. Do you think it's just an age thing, or is it more a generation thing, like which is specific to millennials?
I feel it is a generation thing, if I can generalize that. I don't know whether I'm doing justice in saying that, but I also feel because of the added competition in today's DNA. The whole era, I feel, or the whole millennial generation is just striving to be do their best, and in order to do their best, they're missing out on a lot of other things which they have to surpass to be the best. And in that process, they're facing a lot of stress, they're facing a lot of anxiety, they are also facing that whole feeling of being alone, because all they're worried about is winning the rat race.
Right. And do you think it comes from a larger issue of, you know, millennials not being paid as much as, let's say, the generation above them? As in, today a millennial would have to work a lot longer to be able to afford an apartment, you know, or a car, which is not something our parents' generation really sort of had to do.
True. I think a lot has to do with the globalization. A lot has to do with the like I said, the rat race where everything is so expensive. So you need to be earning a certain amount of money to be able to survive. Also, I feel with the millennials that they are very, very stringent in the way they want their lifestyle to be. Now, I don't know whether that lifestyle concept is coming because their parents have given them that lifestyle and they want to continue living that lifestyle, or they just aspire a particular lifestyle, because when you aspire a particular lifestyle, you need to back it up with the kind of finances that you want. To just give you an added perspective, like the way urbanization is happening, the way our cities are being built, it is also adding to isolation. If you see, there are not very well connected parks everywhere. The buildings are all vertical, wherein you have to go via elevator. There is no concept of taking stairs and going to the 20th floor. I don't think anybody will, you know, manage to do that. Also, people are so busy with their work life that they forget their personal life completely. So all of this is adding to the stress and the isolation and the lack of, functioning with a balanced approach, if I may put it like that.
Okay, but I have an interesting question to that. Like, what do you think that's going to ultimately lead to for millennials? Like 50 years, 30 years down the line, 20 years down the line, what kind of generation will millennials be? Like, if they face these kind of problems in their 20s and, you know, early 30s, then I wonder that by the time they're in their 40s or 50s, what kind of relationships they'd share with their kids or their parents, or even just between, like, themselves, with their work.
I think I'm going to answer that with a counter question, because I feel, do you really feel a millennial will have a family in the first place? Because the concept of family is just reducing bit by bit. Earlier, we started with joint family with 20, 30 members. Then slowly it came down to 10 members. Now there are families where it's either individual or husband and wife. Millennials don't want to have kids either. So I really wonder, and I would love to question the millennials, that what is the concept of relationship that you have in today's DNA? Because if work is all that you're, chasing after, you're actually choosing to be isolated from everything.
Right. I think for a lot of us, it's like work and independence. And I'm not sure we're able to see the flip sides of what that independence really will bring with it.
True. Because I also feel when I have these conversations and when millennials tell me that, yeah, I want by 50, I want to become a CEO of a company, for example. But they don't have the bandwidth or the scope to project how their relationships would be like, because you're eating up the space of your personal life to actually reach the position that you want to. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's good to be ambitious. It's good to want to climb the ladder to be a CEO of a company, but it is also required to be balanced, wherein you get that love and affection, you get that attention, you get that, you have somebody to communicate with.
And these are things that will ultimately help you become that CEO when you, like, want to be.
Correct. And that is why I feel right now the MNCs are also focusing on building an overall personality.
Right.
So that the skill sets can be enhanced, or your productivity can be enhanced, because you're at peace with your other aspects of life.
Right. Okay. That's a very interesting perspective on millennials. Also very scary. But okay. So I think we spoke a little bit about generational issues, and, like, I guess we could call it generational trauma for millennials.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think. Yes, you can. You can.
Because it causes serious harm, right, to their lives.
Yes.
And to their health. I read somewhere that millennials are the unhealthiest generation in a long time. Like, they're both unhealthy and broke.
True. Before I go into generational trauma, I must say that the reason why I feel that the millennials are unhealthy is because, you know, some of the issues that arise with respect to them is conflicts. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of pressure to perform. There's, for marriages, there's marital strain because there's no adjustment or accommodation. And I think all in all, communication and trust are the main issues which add into the, you know, stress factor of millennials. And when you look at trauma, trauma is nothing but an experience that happens in an individual's life that can create serious harm.
Right.
That could be because of communication, that could be because of suppression, that could be because of trust issues, and hence the consequence could be violence, or consequence could be depression, or consequence would be isolation in, you know, complete concept.
So some of this trauma clearly is like because of the socio-political issues or the socio-political environment in which, you know, they've grown up. But how much of it is caused because of, you know, the generation that brought them up? Like, how much of this trauma is intergenerational?
I feel so it depends on the experience of, you know, the generation above you and how they have handled the trauma and how they have passed that trauma on to the existing generation. So, generational trauma or intergenerational trauma can be passed on via genes, and it can also be passed on via the way you have been brought up.
Like, let's talk a little bit about millennials and marriages. What do, as someone who is a millennial and, you know, in her late 20s, I get to meet a lot of friends and, you know, family members who are very curious to see what do millennials think of marriage and how do they think of their relationships?
Right. So, it's a very interesting question because when I talk to people regarding marriages and when I have clients coming to me, when you know that arranged marriages are not right for me and I want to do love marriage, and you know, you come up with these belief systems of this is right and this is wrong. Specifically, when it comes to marriages, the previous generation, there are love marriages in previous generations. It's not there, but I think the culture slash the family dynamics push towards arranged marriages.
Right.
Now, when you talk about arranged marriages, it's more to do with trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's more to do with adjustment. It's more to do with, you know, starting your life from scratch, which I think contradicts the whole being of millennials today, because they want to be independent. They want to make their own choices. They want to build their own trust. They don't want to follow their parents' footsteps. I think I can say that from my own personal experience as well. But so when we talk about marriages with millennials, I feel half generation doesn't want to get married because they feel their independence will be gone. Wherein half the generation wants to get married to somebody who knows them, who allows them that space, who gives them that independence. I think they are very, very not okay with the whole interdependence concept. It's like, I need you, but I don't need you, sort of a thing, right? So I will come to you when I need you, otherwise just give me my space. So marriages have to be looked at more objectively, where you know, they need to understand the basis of marriage, wherein it's more to do with two people together, moving forward in life, adjusting, accommodating, fighting.
I've often like seen a lot of people seek out very independent people to get married to. But then the thing about that is that if they're so independent, then they probably don't even need marriage. They don't even want to get married. So
exactly. So, you know, when you talk about the whole concept of independence, it's an alone life.
Does it have to be like you can want to be independent and yet want someone? Maybe because the way we've seen dependence, you know, in our parents' generation, we just don't want that, I guess.
True. So you can have that independence and yet have a partner, but you have to be understanding towards the needs of each other. You need to understand the concept of space. You need to understand the concept of giving in. So if two individuals are independent and two individuals are headstrong, imagine their ambition taking them into two different separate journeys. It needs to have a balance wherein both independent human beings are allowing themselves to bend as and when the other person needs them to.
How many of these changes, in the way that millennials think about marriage, do you think comes from the fact that a lot of millennial females are working and, are financially independent?
I think that also plays a role, because when women are working and when women are financially independent, they do not want to give up their life to run a house. So the concept for the older generation that a lady can run a house as well as work is still new. I'm not taking away the fact that the older generation are adjusting. They are. So there are a lot of millennials who are married where men and women both are working and they're living happily. There are situations where women struggling to even voice her opinion that she wants to work, but she's unable to work. So all permutation combinations are being explored. It's just about how the older generation builds that trust and allows the lady to flourish, that she can do that professionally and do that personally as well. Another thing that adds to the whole confusion, if I may put it like that, is having a child. If you see, the concept of nuclear families is building up, and earlier it was four members. From four members, it came to three members. From now, three members is coming to two members, because women do not have the time to raise a child till they feel they are ready to raise a child.
And I feel like millennial children of millennial, they're going to have a very different set of problems, growing up, and a different set of capabilities because of the way that they've been raised, by two ambitious or very independent parents. And I wonder what that would be like, for the generation that comes after us.
It's going to be really interesting to see, because their emotional quotient will be low, I feel. Don't hold me to that, but I just get a feeling that the emotional quotient will be way lesser in terms of attachment, in terms of respect. I think the independence quotient will be really high, because that's what they've seen growing around themselves. If two working parents have a single child, the single child will not spend as much time as probably the older generation would with their parents, because they've seen their parents going to work. So for them, the work aspect becomes really high. Whereas in older generation, the family time was very high. People could just like let go of work and spend time with family. Whereas in today's generation, it's very difficult to take leave. It's very difficult to take time out to be with your family.
Right.
So emotions, attachment, trust, these will be some issues which will be, taking a different direction altogether when the kids of millennials grow up 20, 30 years later.
Now is as good a time as any to end this wonderful conversation that we've had, Radhika. Thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really nice. And I hope we are able to spread awareness, and wish you all the very best in doing so.